currently the co-host of the WRKO Boston.com morning show, which is each morning from 6 to 10 on WRKO. I am a Swampscott resident, so from there on the North Shore. And I am married to an attorney, and that doesn't make him a bad guy. I just want you to know he's a good guy. I have two children. My oldest is in college up at Colby College, and my youngest goes to school at Pingree, which is in Hamilton. I'm originally from the Midwest, from St. Louis, and my husband and I met at the University of Missouri, where I got a journalism degree a few years ago. So that's just sort of a quick synopsis of who I am. I worked in television for the first 20-something years of my career, including a couple of different stations here in the Boston market, and then left television and started my radio career.
Tell me about television news, what it was like then and how it's changed today.
Well, it certainly has changed. It's changed over the course of my career when I was working in television news. It went from, I think, you know, when I was in J school and came out as a fresh, wet behind the ears journalist, it really went from being something of integrity and a job that that was taken very seriously to something that's become much more info entertainment kind of thing, and changed pretty dramatically. And I think in the eyes of those who consume television news, it's sort of changed for them as well. I think they recognize that they will turn to certain stations and hear a certain kind of slant. I think that they can anticipate that sometimes what they hear is being put on first versus necessarily being put on correctly. So it's changed in a lot of ways. That's not to say that all of it has changed in bad ways. There's been a lot of good since I started as well, Josh. You know, now they can bring it right into your home news thanks to all the live capabilities and the fast capabilities. They can bring it to you in different forms. So there's been a lot of good that's happened as well.
You consider yourself a journalist, and as a journalist, you have used different mediums of television and radio to get your story or get the story across. Yet today we see television, quote-unquote, news shows, news-oriented shows, in which the person who is articulating the story or reporting or interviewing has no journalism background at all. Do you find that frustrating, and is your sense that the public doesn't get that, or that, you know, they do, or it doesn't matter?
Well, you know, Josh, you bring up a point that for someone who is in my generation of journalism and specifically television journalism, I think it's exactly why we are very frustrated with it. Because, number one, I don't think the audience does see the difference. It all started back, you know, when I was, I don't know, probably 10 years out of college, maybe less, when we started to have these entertainment shows that positioned themselves in such a way that it appeared to be news. So you had the anchor behind the desk who was reading, you know, the entertainment stories and the gossip stories. And this started to blur the lines as to whether you were watching an entertainment show or were you watching a newscast. So to me, that's where the lines started to blur. Those were presenters. They certainly were not journalists. And the people who were out in the field, they weren't journalists. They were reporters who were out covering entertainment. And I think that people got more and more comfortable with the idea of blurring those lines, and it became standard for a newscast to begin to blur the lines as well. And we started to include the kind of news that wasn't necessarily hardcore journalism that I grew up and learned about in J school, but instead we started to put in some of that info entertainment inside of a what would be a standard newscast. And now the lines are so blurred that I don't think people do know the difference between someone who considers themselves to be a journalist and someone who is a presenter. And that's very frustrating for a lot of people. And I think it's frustrating for the consumer who's specifically looking for the journalist.
Kim, I'm Rick Moore. I actually own MSO, and I was brought up a long time ago, and I think it was Journalism 101. that the journalist never becomes the story, which you find out. You find that in sports, you find it in news, and it's everywhere. And, of course, the fake news headlines that we get now out of Twitter accounts. On WRKO, how do you deal with making sure that your audience, you have a mature audience, understands that your sources are credible and you are getting out real information? Because, as you just mentioned, it's frustrating to me to see the crap that's out there. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
Okay, explain that, please.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you this. This is what is. It's been a really interesting experience for me to go from what I considered to be wearing my journalist hat and sitting behind a desk and reading off of a teleprompter, and then being a part of WRKO's lineup. Because we're more of an opinion talk show, and we come to the table with all of these different sources and frequently allow the audience to make a decision as to what they think of the reporting, what they think is fact and what is fiction. It's very interesting to see how different audiences interpret different reports. And then we convey what we believe to be fact versus fiction. So sometimes we're not so much coming to our audience saying, this is my source and I believe it. Sometimes I'm coming to the audience saying, this is a source out there. Do you believe it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this has really been a real eye-opener, and it's been really interesting. And it has really changed my view of a lot of sources out there, because I've listened to different viewpoints from our audience, and they've opened my eyes. And they've made me see that, wow, there is really some biased journalism out there, biased to the right, biased to the left. And there are some real credible sources out there that I believe that maybe other people don't. So, again, this is this really blurred, interesting world that we live in right now. And this concept of fake news, which seems to have come about in this last political cycle and now has come to the forefront, this is an area that you and I could talk about for the next 2 hours, and what is fake news and how did this all come about. But it has really changed everyone's opinion about what used to be standard news out there, what used to be the, what we all thought was our news source every day. It's really changed the way we view it.
At some point in the future, I hope I can make contact with you again, because I actually teach a course out of Endicott College on fake news and media and so on, and it would be great to get your experience and your opinions and your stories. A lot of the stuff that's fake news now used to be called propaganda, so I'll let it go at that. Josh?
I was watching I watched the political returns that come in any time there's an election on, and because I spent several years campaigning for people and all of that and being part of the political system. And I was flicking the channels during election night and in the night before the presidential election. And I'm looking at, and I don't know won't identify what station it was, but one station, and they're doing the latest poll. And the latest poll shows Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Montana as not solid Republican. They're not colored red. The polls are indicating that they're shifting. And I'm thinking, holy in hell, that Texas is going to go, is not going to go all Republican. I just can't imagine. And then the night of the election, I'm flipping the channels, and one channel has just said Florida is going to go Republican. He's 260,000 votes ahead. And the next station doesn't have that information or isn't reporting that. And I it was interesting to watch six channels back and forth and to see how the contrast was. Did journalism take a hit or just the pollsters?
Well, I got to tell you, I think there's a combination of both. I think that we learned a lot about pollsters this last go around, and I think one of the things that we learned about pollsters is that it's really in the way they ask the question, the kind of results they get, and that means they are slanted one direction or another. And I don't think that traditionally we thought pollsters did that, but we certainly learned that during the course of this last cycle. And I think, you know, the election was certainly a great example, and the coverage subsequently has been so interesting to watch. Yesterday would have been a fantastic example of it when you flipped between different cable networks and really even traditional television stations and traditional networks, and you saw the difference in the coverage of what occurred yesterday and the interpretation. And we didn't used to see that. People used to say to me, they couldn't get over how, thank goodness it was a two-newspaper town because the two newspapers were so dramatically different. I don't think that anyone who said that 10 years ago had any idea how just dramatically different the two newspapers or the different networks could ultimately be, because now you can lay them side by side or you can watch a television screen side by side and they're covering the exact same story and the headlines could not be more dramatically different.
And that's not a bad thing, but we used to have to study that to get that. Kim, can I ask you what your day is like? Can you give us a behind-the-scenes description of what your work day is like?
Sure. I climb out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, God.
And I thought I left mornings and not to ever do that again, but I certainly do it now. And by 3:30, I am knee-deep in headlines and reading newspapers, so that I can get caught up on what has happened since I've been in bed. I make my way to the station by 5 a.m., at which time we collaborate with two producers and my co-host, and we talk about the subject matters and what's going on in the world and what we think will be of most interest to our listeners. We're on for 4 hours, and afterward we huddle again to see what hit and what missed and what we can do better. I give myself about an hour and a half or 2 hours, and then I get right back into the news cycle, and I stay in and out of that news cycle throughout the entire day. And then we powwow as a show, again, with those same people that I've met at 5 o'clock in the morning. At about 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon,
wow,
we put together what would be a skeleton rundown for the following morning. And then everybody goes to bed, and that process starts again. So wow. I always laugh and say Fridays, after I leave the station, I check out, and I don't come back really to the news cycle, assuming nothing major happens until Sunday morning when the talk shows start again on Sunday morning, just to give myself a little bit of break because the rest of the week is pretty intense.
Wow.
And it sounds like you still have the fire in the belly and you love it, because anybody putting in those kinds of hours, you'd better love it.
Yeah. Well, it's good to get on vacation because you try to go someplace where you don't see a TV or you don't read a newspaper. The bad thing is your phone seems to go with you everywhere you go. My husband's trying to cut me off most of the time when we're away.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. You know, when I'm watching TV, I have the phone in my hand so that I can look up, you know, the broadcast, you know, switch to one channel and say,
sure,
what is that person's background? So you Google a person and they ran a car wash system. that's what they did before they were on Fox News or where whatever channel it was.
Right, right.
Do you?
It is amazing.
I watched an interview with Megyn Kelly when she was pitching her book, one of the many interviews, and she said, very matter-of-factly, when she was engaged in her sexual harassment suit, she said, "Of course, I didn't look anything like this." She said it was before I was "quote unquote" foxified. Do you have and it may not, it may be unique to one channel or not, but you know, I'm curious, when we see people on television reporting the news, do they wear? Is their wardrobe picked for them, or do they pick their? Or is there anything behind what they wear?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you. First off, it's not a coincidence that when you watch people who are on television, most of them are attractive. It is a visual medium, and I think anybody who denies that is just not being truthful with themselves or whomever they're speaking to. So it is a visual medium, and that is a part of the reason that people are chosen to work in television. That's number one. Number two, just because you're attractive doesn't mean you're not smart. And I think sometimes people, don't equate the two together, but that certainly is a falsehood. Now, number three, and addressing what you've asked, there are, I think, networks and there are television stations that are more demanding and who put more emphasis on that than others do. And I would say to you, judging from the many people that I have known who have worked for Fox, and I personally have also worked for Fox, that they put more emphasis on those issues than other networks. And I work for CBS, and I work for independent, you know, television operators. They put more emphasis on that than any other network that I'd worked for in the past.
Well, thank you. You know, I'd ask the question, if Don Kent, Jack Chase, and Shelby Scott were available today, would they be hired?
I think the answer might be no, and I'm very truthful about that. I think we, you know, again, like I said to you, I think if you're not honest about that, you're not telling the truth.
What about the internet and social media and the devices? Because obviously in Boston, you know, we're inundated, if that's the right word, with 24-hour talk shows, especially out of the sports arena. But how has it changed for you in keeping up with, you know, with the internet and the instantaneous news that everybody has available?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel like our business has probably, that is the biggest change that's occurred since I've been in the media. It's the fact that there is so much competition now, and that things are so immediate, and that we are carrying the information with us at all times. I don't know that anyone ever knew what an iPhone would mean to society mm-hmm. when they first purchased it, but it is incredible what it has done. And it certainly has changed our business, because there is no need to wait. There is no more appointment setting. It is now, it is all the time, it's frequent, it's in your face, it's in your purse, it's in your pocket. So it's, and I think these changes are just evolving now. I think it's going to be incredible what we see over the next 6 months, over the next year, over the next 2 years, because I think what we're going to be witnessing is this constant streaming. I think that we will no longer be watching televisions in our home. We're certainly not going to be attached to cable. And I think it's going to be so dramatically different. And I think what's amazing about my business now is that my parents sit in St. Louis, and they listen to me every morning like I was sitting in the room next to them.
Yeah.
And the reason is because they're on an app, and they're listening to me all the time. So it's incredible how it's changed. It's given those of us in the media an enormous amount of exposure, but at the same time, you got to be better, and you got to be bigger, and you got to be quicker, and you got to be smarter, because the competition is greater.
I used to listen to KMOX St. Louis when I was growing up in high school, and I'm familiar with it, so I get that.
But you weren't listening to it on an app, were you?
Oh, no. I was in Texas, actually, and it was pretty scratchy at night, but it is amazing now. The other thing is, one quick question, and I know you're very busy. I was in Ireland during the marathon bombing in 2013, and I immediately went to, we saw it on television in Ireland, in Killarney, and then we immediately went to the apps. And I went to the Boston Globe Twitter account, and I went to Channel 5 Twitter account and other places. And I was amazed at the wrong information that they were tweeting out. So in your business, where you are sitting as in a seat of credibility, I imagine that you have to be a little bit, you have to be even extra careful than getting your stories as we used to from AP and UPI.
Well, and that is so absolutely true. And I'll tell you, that's the one downfall of what has become this incredible competition and this exposure, because all the mistakes are exposed as well, and they're exposed on a much grander scale. And because we have this thing called Twitter, you know, someone can be standing somewhere and hear a rumor and send it out, and then the rumor becomes, again, this is where I equate fake news. This is what happens here. It's this immediacy. It's this idea that I've heard it, it must be real, and now I'm going to send it out as if it's news. You know, my takeaway from that is that as a consumer of news, not as someone who's producing it, but as a consumer of news, you really have to discriminate in your mind what you believe are sources that have been credible and what sources have not. And you really have to be a discerning consumer of all of these different sources that are coming at you.
Well spoken. Appreciate that.
One last thing before we let you go. You know, talk about Twitter, and I've noticed that everyone in the Real Journalist and the other ones has a Twitter account. And it is a big deal to have one, and it is a big deal to have a following. A number of journalists have a Facebook page or certainly a LinkedIn page, and there's an appreciation or a like so-and-so thing. When did that all come together, and how did that evolve, and what do you think of it?
Well, at first I was just absolutely opposed to it because social media at my house was my kid.
Yeah.
I had no idea that what would ultimately happen is that the messages that as a journalist and as someone in the media would start to be disseminated through social media. But this is the way of the world now. And quite frankly, this is part of those changes that I was just talking about that I anticipate in the next 6 months, in the next year, in the next 2 years. I think that a lot of people will be getting most of their information through social media if they're not already. I find that Twitter is an interesting animal. Twitter is some place where journalists speak to other journalists, really more than I think most people out in the community. I don't know that many people who have Twitter accounts who are not a member of the media. And so it's an interesting, I think it's an interesting animal because it is where so many journalists go to get some of their information that they ultimately end up sending out that's not true. So I think Twitter can be very dangerous. It can be very helpful, but it can be very dangerous. Facebook, on the other hand, really has taken a turn because of this whole idea of live Facebook capability, which now we're going to see on Twitter and other places too. Mm-hmm. This is going to change the whole face of how information is sent out because now we can do it live on our phone. So again, the face of journalism, media, it's all changing and it really is amazing. And whether you like these kinds of things or not, they are the direction in which we're going and this is where we're sharing news.